all of us were skeptical from the beginning, just because it almost seems a little bit too good to be true.
Hello, construction industry professionals. You're listening to The Art of Construction, specifically designed for contractors and architects to help grow your business. Here are your hosts, Devin and Kevin.
So Kevin, we're going to dive in and have a fireside chat with, I would call, a trifecta show.
Absolutely.
And what does that mean?
That means it kind of comes full circle after having some other great guests on the show that we'll get into in a little detail.
So I'll highlight that in the show, but show 37 with Todd Redding of Charette Venture Group, tied into show 40 with Mark LePage of the Business Plan Competition. Now we have those people that are truly telling the story that have signed up and hear the story of Love Shack Architecture. And customers, be careful how you spell this when you search this. My IT department, we had a good laugh when we put in Love Shack into Google. So it's Lindsay Love, L-O-V-E.
That's the easy part.
The very easy part. After that is Shack, and you would typically spell Shack a different way. But Lindsay Shack is S-C-H-A-C-K. So Lindsay Love is out of a suburb of Jackson Hole, Wyoming, and Lindsay Shack is out of Bozeman, Montana, and they both came out of Montana, but when we reference them in the show, we will talk LL, which is Lindsay Love, and LS, which is Lindsay Shack. Stick with us here because we worked with Lindsay Love, who is in her office, where we do have some background noise, but when she's not speaking, we got her muted, so 3 out of 4 ain't bad, but you definitely have a little bit of background noise by LL. But hang in there because the conversation is great.
And they're busy.
I'm Devin Tilley. On my day job is the president owner of Mountain View Window and Door.
And I'm Kevin Keefe, sales manager and chief relationship officer here at Mountain View Window and Door. So here we go.
Lindsay Love, what's your favorite beverage?
I would almost say gin and tonic, but then it's going to be the same thing as Todd Redding said.
And the guy we interviewed yesterday, yeah. So there's a lot of gin and tonic,
Okay, well, I'll just go with it. I like gin and tonics a lot.
Definitely.
Or champagne. Champagne's fun, too.
Cool. Just not mixed together.
Right.
Tell us about the favorite place you've traveled.
I love Mexico, all of Mexico. I love the colors and the language. I love Spanish. And I really, really love historical architecture and I haven't really been to, like, Rome, you know, Lindsay Shack has, or a lot of places in Europe, but I like that there's range of history of types of architecture there.
Most people think of the beat cities. What's your favorite when it comes to architecture? Is it Mexico City, Cuernavaca? What would be your favorite spot?
I would actually say this little town of San Cristobal de Allende, which is in Chiapas, and it's very south. It's near Guatemala. It's pretty high elevation, and it actually feels like it's a mountain town. Just got this incredible light, ancient buildings as well as new buildings. Their culture is a little bit different than the rest of Mexico. Like, they've sort of taken, because their Mayan roots were maybe more strong there, or they held on to them but incorporated Catholicism into that, kind of like this little pocket of something special. Yeah.
Well, what's your favorite hobby when you're not in the business of architecture?
Well, that doesn't happen very often, but I love running and cross-country skiing and basically just anything outside.
Lindsay Love got through the speed round that we're going to refer to as LL the rest of the show. And next we have Lindsay Shack. Tell us what your favorite beverage is.
I would probably have to say it's coffee. I'm very much fueled by coffee in the morning and throughout the day. I'm trying to drink more water, and hopefully I'm not too overly caffeinated right now. but it is somewhat of a lifeline, and I like finding coffee places wherever I go, and my husband kind of made me into a bit of a coffee snob, so
gotcha.
I've learned to really appreciate good coffee.
Cool. Right. Tell us about the favorite place you've traveled.
It's a little cliche probably for an architect, but it would definitely be Italy. I had the luck of being able to go there during architectural school, and I grew up in a small rural community in eastern Montana, and so going to Europe and being in the small little villages as well as the cities, a pretty tremendous experience, and one that I hope to repeat soon.
Great. And your favorite hobby or interest outside of architecture?
When I'm not in my role as an architect, I'm usually wearing the mom hat. And then we are a pretty active family. We really enjoy fishing and cycling and camping and enjoying the outdoors. It's why we live here.
So we have Lindsay Shack, a little bit about her, as well as Lindsay Love, that, as Lindsay Shack said, customers refer to them as LS and LL because you have their last names, which are Love and Shack, to create Love Shack Architecture. So where are you out of, Lindsay Shack, and tell us about Love Shack Architecture?
I live in Manhattan, Montana, which is just outside of Bozeman, Montana. Western Montana has seen a huge growth in the building industry in the last 10 or 15 years. Love Shack Architecture was founded about a year and a half ago when Lindsay Love and I connected. We were friends in school, started architecture school together about 15 years ago. And when we reconnected over social media just to sort of check in and help each other out a little bit with some of the same questions we were answering in our own lives about practice and so forth, we started initially consulting for each other, and then that evolved into, well, maybe we should take this seriously and make it into a business. We did kind of joke about it in the beginning about the name, and we just thought, oh, we could never do that. It's bad enough that we have the same first names. We can't be so cheeky in naming our company. It is memorable, and we had a lot of people sort of demand that we make that choice and say, no, you have to use your names. It's funny. It's actually quite common, of course, in architectural practice that firms are named after the names of the principal. So why wouldn't we do the same?
That's great. So we have Love Shacks, where LL is outside of a suburb of Jackson Hole, Wyoming, and LS is in a suburb outside of Bozeman, Montana, correct?
That's it.
All right. So awesome. We got to know a little bit about LL and LS. And to set the stage, I want to talk through why we wanted to have everybody into Studio MVWD. As the AOC, we make all the shows global and timeless. But if you go back to show 37, where we had the CEO of Charette Venture Group, Todd Redding, I challenge you to go back and listen to his show after you hear the story of Love Shack, and we'll talk about why there's definitely some parallels there, as well as show 40, where we had Mark LePage, the owner of the Entree Architect, where we had him on the week after we had met LL and LS at the National AIA show in Philadelphia, where we went to the finalists and the awards for the business plan competition that we talked through with Mark on that show. So if you want to get a deep dive into both of those, you can go back and see those shows. But this is kind of the trifecta, where we bring it full circle, and we have, tell us about the Charette Venture Group and where the relationship has gone for your firm.
Just in the beginnings of our partnership, and even deciding if an actual formal partnership was the right structure for us, I went out there to do some research and to find out what I needed to do to figure out the right way to build a company. I didn't intend to start my own company necessarily. We had clients and work, and we were trying to figure out the right strategy to be successful. And I was kind of disappointed when I got out there into the world and researching from my mentors and online sources that there wasn't a roadmap. I'm sure it is naive that I thought that existed, but there really wasn't a roadmap for how to set up the kind of company we wanted to build. So we're designers, we create solutions, and so we went for it and decided to figure it out on our own. And I stumbled across the Charette Venture Group's architecture business plan competition. And when I found out that there was such a thing, because we had talked about entering design competitions in general as firm value, we thought we need to write a business plan no matter what. And so maybe this would provide structure and deadline for us to get that done. It doesn't cost anything to enter. There really wasn't a risk. So we went ahead and decided we would work on that. In the meantime, this would be the fall of 2015, Todd Redding was invited to speak at the Montana AAA convention in Bozeman. He gave a similar presentation to one that he's given online about the basics of what Charette Venture Group is all about. But I saw the people in the room on the edge of their seats. He really sort of lit the room up. There was a lot of energy in the room surrounding what's the future of working in architecture, where all these small firms, there's many, many, many small firms in Montana and Idaho and Wyoming. And it was clear that he had touched a nerve in the room. And I think he did get a lot of response from that talk from interested people. He and I chatted a little bit at the convention. And from there, a conversation developed around Love Shack Architecture being one of CVG's assets. And we had already entered the business plan competition at that point. And so that conversation continued. And then later in 2016, developed into a formal relationship.
Awesome. And for those that are listening, you guys were finalists in that business plan competition, as well as now becoming a strategic partner with Charette Venture Group. So talk a little bit about the competition and kind of what that experience was like and what has changed or what is evolving since that competition a couple months ago.
The business plan competition proved to be kind of exactly what we hoped it would be, in that we forced ourselves to really get into it and figure out exactly what our goals were, to define them and make a plan for how we thought we might be able to achieve them. We were stunned and thrilled that we were chosen as finalists, and we were just really grateful for the opportunity to get to go to Philadelphia and meet a lot of wonderful people that were all supportive of primarily supporting and improving the architecture profession everywhere. And through that process, I won't say that we didn't do what architects typically do. We tried not to wait till the last minute to finalize our business plan, but we were finalizing our presentation right up to the last minute. And it was honestly one of the most stressful moments for us, I think, that we've had as business partners. And we got through it, and like, we're great friends, and we were happy to have gone through it together and reinforced the fact that we know we're a good team. And for me, Lindsay Shack, I think, had done a little bit more research than I had about the business plan competition and just about building a business in general in architecture. I am just excited and thrilled about all the changes and how there's a community grown around starting up a business firm, because I know that 10 years ago, if we had started it, we wouldn't have any of this. I don't know how we would do it otherwise.
Yeah, it's an amazing tool that the CVG has out there, and that they're not a sponsor of our show officially, but they've been very helpful with our business, getting to meet a lot of people like you guys, and it's give and you will get. And it's so cool to have someone, Matt Ostenick, who's funding this to kind of give back and build the next group of architects for a firm that he did. And it's just such a cool story, and what a great paving the lane for this. And when I sat and listened to Todd, I was the same way. I was on the edge of my seat when he was a guest on our show, and we were all in on that. And it's really fun to hear someone who signed up for them. So LS, tell us the story of what and why, and what was the moment, what made you sign up to actually sign up with Charette Venture Group after you did all your due diligence?
It was a longer process than I think. Well, it happened actually pretty fast, but it still was a very long back and forth process. Once we decided that we did want to join with them, we did take our time, and they allowed us that. There's never any pressure. We just made sure we had the right content in our agreement. But backing even up from that, in trying to wrap our brains around what CVG was and talk to our own network, our own mentors, our own support group about what this opportunity meant to partner with them. I mean, it took time. I mean, it took weeks and months to just sort of get over the hump of, is this a real thing? And is this a legitimate source or path? Because it's so atypical in architecture for there to be an investment group that invests in small firms. And then there was an inevitable question too of, is this something that we could do on our own? Do we need a partner? Or is it, if we just really set our minds to it, could we figure out these things through, and say, paying an executive coach or something? And ultimately, through conversations with Todd, conversations with Matt, conversations between each other, we started to break down the parts and realize that this was a good opportunity for us. So ultimately, what we realized by partnering with CVG, that we thought we'd be successful on our own. We felt confident that we could be successful. I guess we were being really cautious about our own ambition, I would say, that in partnering with each other, we shared a desire to build a company that was sustainable for our own lives, not from an energy standpoint, but from we want to still be able to sleep at night, and we still want to have a life outside of our companies. And we chose to live here for a reason. We want to have time and space to enjoy where we live. So we wanted to have a really measured view of whether or not this was the right scale for us. And once we were clear with CVG that about those expectations, that we don't have a plan to become a giant company. We really were committed to, you know, some of our ethics and ideals of the kind of company we wanted to build. And as long as they were okay with that, in terms of us kind of staying on the smaller side of their scale, maybe being a little bit slower to grow, that we were really excited to see what this could do for both of our companies. And they were on board from the beginning. It was very encouraging. I think it was also through the process, tremendously encouraging to be talking to somebody like Todd Redding, who has put a couple of years into researching small firms across the country. The research and information that he's put together is tremendously useful to know that certain things are common and certain things aren't common. And here's our common pitfalls or perhaps best practices. And like you said, Devin, to pave the way for us to learn from that knowledge is pretty tremendous. So once we sort of vetted the company and we felt confident that this was a solid opportunity, our families, our support networks were even, all of us were skeptical from the beginning, just because it almost seemed a little bit too good to be true. Once we got to the point where we had to make a choice, we got over that choice essentially by having a conversation with each other about what does the worst case scenario look like? And where do we want to be in 5 years? And between those two conversations, we decided that going ahead and taking the leap and signing an agreement with them was where we wanted to go. And I kind of haven't looked back since. It's been a really good experience so far. When we've been in it just about half the year.
Awesome. Well, kudos to both of you for that opportunity, because in our conversations with CVG, we recognize that this is not something that they're looking for everybody. I mean, they're very particular, both in terms of the business plan competition. So kudos on that one for being a finalist. That's a big accomplishment for those that may not be aware that there were, I don't know, there was well over 100 applicants, I believe, from talking to them about it. And then secondarily, for them to invest as a strategic partner with you, I think is also a huge accomplishment as well, because they're seeing people all over the country and they effectively get to pick and choose who they work with. And so it's exciting for us to hear that's worked for you and it's working for you. So that's very exciting for us to hear.
Thank you.
So I'm listening to Lindsay Love and Lindsay Shack both tell their story. And hearing you guys, it sounds like you're both very different personalities, if I were to guess, without spending a lot more time other than meeting you at the AIA and listening to you here on the show. And I want to peel back a few layers and talk about how in my day-to-day, I own a window and door company, and I'm an expressive that I'm the 10X guy going crazy all the time. But my VP of sales and marketing is a total analytical that is the total opposite of me. Lindsay Shack, tell us about your two personalities and how you worked through that to actually sign the dotted line to create a business together and then sign a 5-year partnership with CVG.
Lindsay Love and I we've always felt like we have pretty complementary personalities and strengths. And we saw right away that we could maybe, from a strengths point, kind of fill in each other's gaps. And Lindsay is really pragmatic and also more cautious than I. Like I'm also the one that is maybe more impulsive, maybe more extroverted, and I get really, really excited about new shiny things. And she really grounds me and helps me kind of come back to earth and come up with a plan and look at the reality of things. And so it's a great harmony. I've said several times to others that one of my favorite qualities of Lindsay Love is that she never hesitates for a second to disagree with me if she needs to. And that's a great, great quality to have, I think, in a partner, where she trusts me enough and I trust her enough to have honesty. And if we don't agree, then we kind of work through that conversation until we figure out what our next move is. But we're ultimately, you know, committed to the partnership and the company that we're growing. And thankfully, through all of that, we're still friends. I think our friendship is growing as we continue to work together. And I think that's pretty special. But in terms of, you know, we are different personalities. It's nice. I think that I'm always the one trying to maybe quiet myself down a little bit. I can be kind of, we just gave a presentation last week and, you know, my voice kind of carries. And I find that other people, you know, are really leaning in to listen to Lindsay Love. And that's one of the things I really like about the way that she presents. It's a different style. Clients seem to respond to it too, where they see this balance between two people that aren't, you know, the same person, but they're working together collaboratively in a successful way.
That's definitely what I wanted to hear. And the reason I bring that up is because you got to tie this all back together. And how I would tie that back together is my co-host of The Art of Construction, he's also the sales manager for Mountain View Window and Door, and his name is Kevin Keefe. And he's the one between Brett and I that I am going crazy and Brett is saying slow down, and he's in the middle taking those two strategies and implementing them together with my sales team. I would see that as something that Charette Venture Group can do for you two, that they can say, here's common of the common practices, but hurry up and slow down, and when and where, how would you put that all together? So what would you say about that, Lindsay Love?
they are really trying to get us to slow down. I know that they're doing the best they can to help us and that we need their help. They have been so helpful. We're trying not to disappoint them. And I think we've set a goal to update our website twice in the past month. And we've done it once, so we're not completely failing, but we are really struggling. We are so busy with day-to-day work and trying to balance, as a growing company, staffing and income and business development, going out and getting more work. We really need CVG to push us and make those things a priority and be, like you said, to force us to slow down and look at the big picture every now and then.
Well, it is important to have outside influences, you know, boards of directors, if you will, or people that you can trust. And so the two of you get along great, and having a third party come in that you also trust can provide some really beneficial systems, structures, and things to keep moving forward in the right way. Because it's very easy to get sidetracked and get busy with tasks and not be able to then look at the global part of your business. So that's exciting.
Yeah, and sometimes we need somebody to break the tie between us on decisions.
There you Definitely. Go.
Well, and I would add, too, that I think that there's a growing industry out there for executive coaches for architects. And I think there's a lot of people out there in that industry that are trying to help architects. But honestly, unless you're an architect yourself, or unless you've been an allied professional and been in the office and understood the business for several years, I don't know how somebody from outside of the industry could be useful. There's so much that is specific to the way we deliver projects and the way we write contracts and the way our services are rendered that what CVG offers is, I think, really unique.
I definitely agree with that. And it's, they maybe could do it over time, but you'd have to educate them so much more than the principles that Matt Ostenick is putting into the firm. Though Todd Redding is not a practicing architect, he's come in and has these people that really did live the field to really drive that business, and it's very focused to that, versus I've met with several people that want to be everything to everybody and they're a coach that can help any business. Well, they may be able to help on certain practices and principles, but not really take a deep dive where you can really take that to the bank. And that's what we're always trying to talk about on The Art of Construction. They're very specific. This show is specifically designed for contractors and architects to grow their business. That's what we talk about every day in our business and our day-to-day stuff, supplying to our ideal customers, which are contractors and architects, as well as listening and learning from them. And we learn something every time we turn on the microphone.
When we had Todd on the show, it was amazing to us to kind of see the grasp that collectively they had on the business. And so it's exciting now to see that come to fruition from our standpoint, to have you folks on the show to talk about it in actual practice, because when we had them on the show, we really thought and believed that what they were offering was pretty fantastic. But now this is the first chance we've had to really speak to somebody that is one of their key strategic partners. And so it's exciting to hear. Talk a little bit about what kinds of architecture you're doing, and maybe a little bit if there were any shifts in direction based on this partnership.
I wouldn't say we've shifted. I think we should say we've focused. Mm-hmm. Lindsay Schack and I came together because we together had a pretty strong vision, although it was vague. Both have different specialties that we both value and respect and think that are very beneficial to the field of architecture and to construction in general. I wouldn't say that we necessarily knew like how to identify the best target clients that would bridge those two specialties. With CVG, with just taking the time, like forcing ourselves to take the time, we've had the opportunity of being able to focus it and figure out strategies to take best advantage of our talents and our specialties and the things that we do best.
So LS, what are those specialties?
Lindsay Love has had a second education in building construction and natural materials. So I'll let her speak a little bit more about that. But she's really spent a lot of time out in the field and learning from some of the best natural builders in the West and the South, actually. Wall assemblies and materials that are non-toxic and natural and historically appropriate. And then I have a very light background in social science. I have an undergraduate degree that I completed before starting architectural school. Then after school, after teaching for a while and working at the university and working for some boutique firms, I discovered the Passive House Institute. So in October, about a year and a half ago, I became a certified Passive House consultant. And we have been trying to push our projects toward net zero if possible, or at least just improving the assemblies of our projects to make them more energy efficient, and to educate both our clients and the building community the very available resources of natural materials and high-performance building envelopes that aren't necessarily, depending upon the calculus you're using, they're not necessarily more expensive, and they're definitely healthier for our bodies.
Yeah, those are definitely some hot-button topics that I would definitely like to peel back some layers. So, Lindsay Love, tell us some of those builders that you're working with and about those natural products.
Some of the people that I've worked with are Laura Bartels of Green Weaver in Carbondale, Colorado. David Eisenberg is one of the pioneers of straw bale construction. He's in Arizona. And then Donnie Kiffmeyer and this organization called Community Rebuilds in Moab, Utah. That's sort of taking the best of like Habitat for Humanity and the low-income self-help programs of the USDA, combining those and giving students credit, college credit, to learn how to build straw bale buildings. And then I most recently completed my own straw bale building up here. Straw bale in this valley that I live in is fairly popular. It kind of has little hot spots around the country, like Carbondale, Colorado is one. Teton Valley, Idaho is another. I think Bozeman has several. They're pretty popular in like New Mexico, Arizona, and California. And building codes are always changing, and some of the people I've worked with have been the pioneers and the proponents of helping alternative construction be more accepted through the building codes and educating inspectors and building officials.
Excellent. So tell us, of all your workings with straw bales, what's the single most unique thing and the most challenging thing about working with building a house out of straw bales?
The most challenging thing is helping people get past the idea of a building built out of something that's not manufactured. 100 years ago, it was absolutely the norm. And nowadays, everything comes from a lumberyard. Everything has a standard stamped on it. And architects, owners, builders, there's just a lot of hesitancy to consider a material that's not manufactured or stamped with a standard. And the fact is that they're actually, earthen materials or natural materials are very viable materials that have been used for thousands of years prior to anything that was manufactured. And buildings have been around for hundreds or thousands of years, built out of them. Yeah, that's the biggest challenge. And the way that Love Shack is addressing that is in a number of ways. We have a relationship with various architects in this area as consultants to help them choose places where natural materials are appropriate in a modern conventional building. There are things that you can do on a conventional building. You don't have to have the full-blown straw bale wall. You could do something like an earthen wall or earthen plasters inside that helps improve your air quality, has zero carbon footprint, and plasters sometimes, depending on what type they are, even pull carbon out of the air. They're entirely applicable still, and we're not aware of them because we're not necessarily taught about them in architecture school, and they're not marketed or branded because you can't own clay. You can't own straw. Like, man, I could go on and on about this, the reasons why it's a challenge, but
I love it.
Hello.
Hi, is this the Art of Construction?
Yeah, it sure is.
Hi, I saw one of your podcasts on Facebook, listened to it, and I had to go back and listen to every single one of the other ones. So far, it's helped my business a lot, and I'd love to learn how to help my business grow even more by being on your podcast.
We're always looking for great guests. All you need to do is go to theartofconstruction.net and go to the contact tab, and then we'll contact you, and we'll have a dialogue to see if it's a good fit.
That's great. I look forward to hearing from you guys.
And it's really just that easy, folks. This is Devin here, and what we do is have a fireside chat, an hour of your time. You can come into our brand new state-of-the-art studio MVWD, or we can set you up through Skype. It's just that easy. We'll answer all your questions, and if you're the right fit to where contractors and architects are listening to this and want to grow their business, hey, come on in. Let's grow together. So I love your passion. So if you want to talk with somebody more, we can put information on the show notes giving to you more about the straw bale house and those kind of natural products, which are really cool. As well as you can go back to show 45 where we had Scott Rodwin in who's a architect and a design build company out of Boulder that does a great job of peeling back some of those layers. Icon on my notes here is kind of taking your natural products in Lindsay Shack's passive house to put that all together into a net zero house. A lot of times you need to look at those natural products and certain ways to do construction, which can be very challenging when you have the dreaded value engineer word and municipalities that if you do something a little bit different than what they're used to having the standardized stamp on. So, Lindsay Shack, tell us about the most unique project and the most challenging project around your passive house expertise.
The passive house expertise is relatively new. We haven't finished or certified a passive house yet. And I don't know how much your listening audience is familiar with the Passive House Institute, but I always like to remind people that it's a pretty poor translation from its German origins, because it's not a passive system at all. It's quite active, and it's not just for houses. It's for any building. We are currently working with clients right now that are very interested in a passive house methodology for their building. I right away learned after being certified as a designer, I passed my test and I took the classes and everything and was ready to apply to my practice. And I realized right away that the goal here is not necessarily to certify buildings. Certification is fantastic, and we really, really hope that very soon we're going to be able to certify a structure. But the standards are quite high, and the range between that standard and a conventionally built structure is vast and wide. There's a lot of room for improvement. And so we realized that we would be doing a service to the design and building community if we could just prove that we could push the envelopes toward passive house. We might not make the HERS rating and pass the blower door test, but we could get pretty close. And even that would be a significant achievement. So I think the biggest challenge is just, it's also an awareness. It's that a lot of people say, oh yeah, passive house, passive solar. I know what that is. It's from the 70s. It's for hippies and things. And you know, it's like, no, actually this is like a high tech, high performance way to approach conserving energy. A passive house will harvest the heat produced not only streaming through your windows onto your floor, but it'll harvest the heat from your dryer and your cooktop and handle the moisture from your shower and your bodies, and has a very small heating system, but a rather complex ventilation system. So often, especially builders will ask about, hey, don't you get mold? What about humidity and moisture? And ultimately it comes down to the heat exchanger and the ability to continually ventilate the building. And so the passive house is great for people who have allergies or are sensitive to the environment, because there's constant fresh air in the building. So those are the things that I think make it really appropriate for not only our climate. I mean, I found it in just researching high performance envelopes for a client a couple of years ago. And when I realized that the first passive house was built in Canada, the first one in the States anyway, wasn't built in Palm Springs. It was built in Canada, north of me. And that my instructor for the Passive House Institute was building in Utah. And I thought, well, gosh, if they're doing it, and nobody in Montana was really doing it yet. It's really been a slow burn, and now it's really starting to catch fire. So the challenge has been kind of about awareness, and then also helping people realize that the Passive House method, Lindsay Love and I are very much interested in doing it in a natural way. The Passive House Institute is maybe different from the LEED standard in that they don't tell you how to do it. They just say the building has to perform at this energy metric, and you can get there any way you want. So there's lots and lots of ways to achieve that goal. And we've been researching and investigating how we can do it, you know, going foam free, if it's possible to go foam free, if we're able to, you know, really limit or eliminate and mitigate toxins and chemicals in the structure. So people are really responding to that, and it's been a really exciting conversation with our clients and contractor partners too, our construction partners that are interested in learning how to build this way.
So it sounds to me like a pretty good business plan. You could become the experts and show people how to do
Absolutely.
That.
Well, and you know, that's something that I think is really exciting about the community, is that this isn't a proprietary type community where, oh, I'm going to go get certified and then I'm going to be the only one in my area and I'm not going to let anyone else know how to do this. The culture of it is the opposite. It's that what we hope is pretty soon every architect has the ability to do it as a passive house, and every builder hopefully is choosing to build in this way. And it's becoming the best practice in Europe, and we're hoping that the States will follow. We have different market economies when it comes to energy, but that's one thing I love about it, like that the culture of passive house is the more the merrier. And let's spread this knowledge as far as we can. I'll go so far as to tell you guys, I was on a build site in Chicago on a passive house that was underway, and the architect just brought out his big pack of drawings and he rolled them out on the table and he said, go ahead, guys. And he walked away and he said, take pictures, you know, take my notes, take my details, do everything you can to educate yourself on what I'm doing here if that's useful to you. And I was astonished. I've never seen anyone do that.
Yeah, I love the saying, give and you will get. It's getting to be a daily occurrence when people ask me, so Devin, you own a window and door company, but you run this podcast and you don't have all these sponsors and you don't do it all this way. And it's truly that I get so much by listening to our guest talk that hopefully our ideal customers learn from that. And you're so much stronger by looking at it that way than trying to be proprietary about everything and say my way or the highway.
Right.
I just think that's a lot of the culture and where the business environment related to architecture and construction is going.
Mm-hmm.
I love the word collaboration. So you say net zero building. Well, you have to have a lot of collaboration to truly get to a net zero house.
Absolutely. Like, we are only successful if we work with builders that are on board, builders that understand the mission and say, oh yes, we're up for this too. With net zero or passive house, you get one sub that kind of doesn't understand the methodology. And, you know, he decides to put in a hose bib at the sill plate and you're done. You're not going to pass your blower door test at that point because you've got a major hole in your envelope. It's actually pretty specific and careful and, you know, rather fussy, honestly, when you get towards the certification phase for a building, but it pays off because then the building works as it's supposed to.
Well, and I think that's a critical point that you just brought up, is that it really forces collaboration because it's not just simply drawing things on paper and then handing it off. You really have to work together in this environment with the subcontractors and with the other people that are on the project to understand what they're doing and for them to understand what you're doing and then to ultimately end up with the finished product that's going to work the way you collectively want it to work, right?
Yep.
And it's not easy to get through. The paperwork's one thing, but then if you actually have to do a test in the field, like we love on commercial projects that we're supplying, that we're doing water testing. And a lot of people just hate that because that's when mistakes are shown up. But I would much rather know about it up front and fix it, just like a blower door test where you're talking about that hose bib. Yeah, if you fail or this happens, it may not be fun that hose bib's in the wrong place, but at least you're going to know it and you're going to have to fix it now versus down the road when you have a bigger problem. That's where it's key to have a general contractor. I love your comment about where you said they need to be on board because it's a lot more attention to detail to get to that net zero house than to blow and go, right?
Exactly. And Lindsay Love is really excellent at interfacing with contractors and she's super comfortable on the job site. And so I think once the contractors have met with us, they very quickly realize that they're talking to an ally. Lindsay, you want to talk a little bit about that?
First of all, I sometimes wish I was a builder, although I don't want to manage all the stress that they deal with. I think their job is harder than ours, but I love being on site. I love getting my hands dirty, and I guess I come to a building site with a positive attitude to begin with, and then I know that if our goal is to help the owner to get what they need the best way that they possibly can and the most efficient way that they can, having good relationships makes that so much easier. When you're butting heads with somebody, it costs more money, time, and energy in the long run, and it's not fun. And building projects are big enough and hard enough, we should all get along. And the other part is that I fully recognize, many of us do, that when we're not the ones actually doing the framing and figuring out the angles, it's a lot easier for us to draw something on paper that looks like it'll go right together or, oh, they can figure it out in the field. That's actually not usually the case. When we recognize that something is challenging on paper, undoubtedly it's going to be challenging in the field. And I would prefer to address those issues ahead of time with the contractor so that either we can avoid them so that the project goes more smoothly and doesn't run into a crux point, or have a plan ahead of time so that we know how it's going to be addressed.
Oh, that's great. And I think the thing we talk about frequently is it's always more efficient and costs less money to fix things on paper up front. But the key thing between architecture or design and construction is having that trust level on both sides that you're in the process together, you're on the same team. While that sounds like a cliche, obviously it's working for you from the standpoint of they understand that you know enough about the details to where you can talk their talk and you can understand the things that they're going through so that you can come to solutions and create solutions much quicker, I'm imagining.
Absolutely.
So I'm going to pretend I am a homeowner that is just blown away by your coming together with having the natural products, with the passive house ideas, with your history being on the job site, with the expressive Lindsay Shack and the person that gets all the details right with Lindsay Love. Where is your target market and where would you design and build my house? What's your areas, meaning Wyoming, Montana, both came from Montana. Lindsay Shack, kind of tell us your target area.
That's a great question, Devin, because we're a remote studio. A lot of our clients that we're building and designing for and working with our builder partners are not full-time residents where we live. There's a pretty big range, but ultimately in this market, most of the work is residential. There are quite a few second homes being built and then also additional structures on existing properties. So lately we've been doing quite a few guest house apartments, new, say, garage facilities with a guest house, or we've seen an uptick in spaces that are intended for, say, Airbnb or VRBO rental. So income-bearing units on existing properties. Our ideal client really is somebody that is either looking to renovate a structure, or actually passive house is appropriate for renovation as well. Ideally build a new home or a new building, and they want to make it as energy efficient and beautiful as possible. We live in this really interesting place where there's this growth in the population of people that are pretty mobile, a lot of telecommuters actually. It seems anecdotal, but it seems more and more true every day that Montana and Idaho and Wyoming are attracting people that can choose where they live and they can do their job from wherever they want to do it. Even if that means all year long or just a portion of the year. And those people need houses, and those people are bringing their cultures from where they're coming from and their desires. And we've been connecting with a lot of those folks. And it's really interesting to see the kind of space that they want, because it's not the typical big, ostentatious, huge ski chalet cabin. It's actually much more modest, much more streamlined, modern, and provides appropriate space for what they need for their lifestyle, their work life, their gear. In Montana and Idaho, we have lots of gear. We have lots of toys. We have boats. We have snow machines. We have climbing gear. We have skis. Speaking with an architect that understands this mountain lifestyle in the way that Lindsay and I do, that we kind of get already what the needs of that space comes to be. And we can very quickly get to know a client and understand how the home or the business, the space, can really support that lifestyle. So that gets us really excited when we get to work with those folks.
Love it. So I'm going to ask you both the same question in closing. If there was one golden nugget for a contractor and architect to grow their business, what is that one thing, Lindsay Love?
I would tell them to back up, slow down, look at the big picture, ask all the questions that can possibly be asked, because that building is going to be there for a lot longer than it takes to ask any questions. I very strongly believe that a better project comes out of taking the time to consider all the options, all the materials, all the factors of your life, your family, 20 years from now, as well as right now. A better project will come out of that process.
Awesome. Lindsay Shack, what would your golden nugget be?
To the other architects and contractors that might be listening, I would really suggest that someone along the lines that Lindsay said, but in a different direction. I really think that being introspective and being honest with yourself about what you want to get out of your vocation. And so it might be that you would be very happy as a member of someone else's team. It might be that it's appropriate for you to try to start your own venture, but that regardless of that, you have to be honest with yourself about what the right fit is for you, because that is ultimately the only way you're going to be successful. When we were architecture students, neither one of us dreamed about owning our own firm one day. We really thought we would spend our careers working for others. And life happens, and it thrusts you into a situation where you realize that nobody else can make that flexible, dreamy situation happen for you. You have to create it for yourself. And so I guess the nugget or the piece of advice would be to really look at that, answer those questions, and then you have to be brave enough to then come up with your answer and follow through.
Well, thanks for coming and telling us your story.
Thanks for having us, guys. It was a fun chat.
Thank you for the opportunity.
So fun to take real world stories and pull them all together. And they were such cool people to meet when from hearing their name, which I know that's one of those they struggled with a lot, but you had to go with the Love Shack.
Absolutely.
And when you meet them, they're so different. It was so fun for me to sit back and listen to them and understand how different personalities are, so different, but yet the two of them working together is such a cool team.
Well, and they're so passionate about what they're doing, and the whole idea of using natural materials with the objective of having as close to passive homes as they can get, just to see them come through this whole process of all the things that we were talking about with Charette Venture Group in terms of the importance of the business plan. Here they went through this major competition, became finalists, and then after and through that whole experience, now as we sit here today, they're a strategic partner with Charette Venture Group in their daily business, which is phenomenal.
And to toot the AOC's horn, it's pretty cool to have a place that we're going to all these different channels and meeting these different people at the National AIA Show in different key places. We talk about that on other shows where we've met people and how you give and you will get and how you pull that all together. But it's fun to be a kind of nucleus to pull all these different segments together and talk about places you may want to check out, but both the front end from hearing Todd Redding's perspective of who his company is, but then great tools like the Entree Architect, where Mark LePage is a judge in the business plan competition and talks through, he's very crucial of that legwork tying together. In fact, Entree Architect is also part of Charette Venture Group. But then the most important thing at the end of the day is your ideal customer. So the Love Shack is the CVG and Entree Architect's ideal customers. Just like at us, it's here at Mountain View Window and Door. So it's cool to be a place where we hear it every day as architects go to school, but then they hit the real world. And they always say the comment, if they only said this, or if I only learned that. Well, I think we're really becoming a platform to be that place to talk through that and learn this and talk that.
Absolutely. And I think that's what's so exciting about what Love Shack is doing, is that that's where the rubber meets the road relative to all the things that we've heard from Charette Venture Group and Entree Architect. All these ideas are now, we're able to share that in practical form and see what they're doing in such a successful way. It's great.
So my call to action, and I know I'm going to see a huge spike in the downloads and the listeners to Todd Redding's show and Mark LePage's show, and simply all you do is go to theartofconstruction.net. They're all there with the show page information and everything all tied together, or through iTunes, Stitcher, through The Art of Construction.
And we'll also on our show notes page have some links going back there as well to make it simple for you.
Simple, make the easy button, AOC.
You have been listening to The Art of Construction, specifically designed for contractors and architects to help grow your business. To listen to more, please go to www.mtnview.us and click on the podcast tab. Don't forget to like us on Facebook, and thanks for listening.